Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Tim Gallego was a singular voice in publishing and in South Dakota. On September 8th, Gallego receives the 2017 Native American Journalists Association's Medal Milestone Achievement Award. He's been honored for a lifetime of service to journalism. In 1979, Tim Gallego became the first American Indian voice in South Dakota newspapers. He went on to found the Lakota Times in 1981. It was the first independently owned Native American newspaper in the country. He founded the Native American Journalists Association and served as its first president. In 2009, he founded the Native Sun News. He's also been a columnist for Huffington Post. He joins us now from the Black Hills Surgical Hospital studio in SDPB's new Black Hills Bureau in Rapid City. Tim Gallego, thanks for being with us.
Good morning, Lori.
And congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Give me an idea of what this award means to you right now.
Well, you know, you spend your life, at least I have for the past 40 years, pursuing a career in journalism and the newspaper business. And it's sort of a culmination of all the hard work you put in all of these years and running a newspaper and publishing every week is a hard, hard job. And it feels very good to be recognized for all of that hard work.
Mm-hmm. Taking back to the first job you ever did before journalism, what was the first work that you had to do?
In journalism?
No, before journalism. I'm curious to go back even further.
Well, I can go back a long way. I can take it back to the 1950s when I was stationed in San Francisco at the San Francisco Naval Shipyard.
Oh.
And I was sitting at my typewriter typing up a requisition. And my commanding officer came in, and he stood behind me and watched me for a minute, and he said, you know, he said, the editor of the Bays newspaper has just been transferred. You're going to be the new editor. And so that's how I actually got to start by accident in the newspaper business.
And what do you think? Was he just because you were typing? Because why you?
Because I was a good typist.
Right? I tell you what, being a good typist got me out of a lot of really hard work when I was in the Marines. I would always need someone to type something fast. So,
exactly.
And what were your first thoughts? Were you thinking, yeah, I can take that on? Or were you wanting to turn away from it?
No, I really enjoyed it. And it was just a challenge every week. We always tried to put a little humor into the Bays newspaper. And it was just fun putting it together. It came out once a month. So when I got out of the service, I used a GI Bill. I went to college at the University of Nevada in Reno. And I think what really pushed me into journalism was one day when my political science class was assigned to go down to the courthouse at the Washoe County Courthouse in Reno on a Monday morning to see some of the cases that were being tried. And the first case was of about 20 Paiute Indians, and they brought them all in and lined them all up and tried them as almost like one person.
Hmm.
The crime they committed, all of them, they were out on the streets after midnight, and in 1958 they had a curfew. Native Americans had to be off the streets before midnight. That was law back then.
Wow.
And I really was incensed over it because I picked up the paper, the Reno Gazette, the next day, saw nothing at all about it. These 20 people were sentenced to 30 days in jail for being out on the streets after curfew. And it pushed me to change most of my majors and focus on journalism. Mm-hmm. Because I always felt that this was not justice in my mind, and I thought that we need to have a voice of our own that's going to address the truth and justice.
So you could have gone into law. You could have seen that as something, or politics. But you saw that moment when you opened the Reno Gazette and saw it wasn't covered. That was the key for you, right?
That was the catalyst for pushing me into a career in journalism.
Wow. Tell me about the original Rapid City Journal columns. How did you end up getting that job?
Well, you know, there was a managing editor named Jim Carrier, who had been with Associated Press, and he came to Rapid City, and he was a pretty open-minded liberal guy. And we had an editor named Jim Keane, who was, I think, a little conservative, but a very nice man. And I was working for a Native American newspaper in San Francisco, a monthly newspaper that really was the largest Native American paper in the United States back then, and it was called Wasaha. It was named after a Yavapai Apache man named Wasaha, who started a newspaper in Arizona and fought against injustice and was always looking for truth. And so I worked for Rupert Costo, the man who started Wasaha. And Jim Carrier was a subscriber to Wasaha, and he started reading some of the things I'd written in Wasaha. So he called me one day and asked if I'd care to come in for an interview. So I went in and talked to him, and he said, I'd like to have you write a weekly column for the Rapid City Journal. So that's how I got started.
Did you have an idea at that time that no one else was really doing that?
Well, I don't think in South Dakota, anyhow, there was no Native Americans,
right,
not even writing columns, but I think working for any of the media in South Dakota. So it was kind of groundbreaking for me, and Jim was just a very good editor. He just told me, just write about the things you know, write about your life on the reservation, and write about the people you know in Rapid City. And so that's the premise I used for the columns I wrote for a few years.
How did you approach that as far as, you know, were you trying to use your column to change a culture? Were you trying to use your column to
express?
Well,
I'm going to keep coming back to the word truth. You know, sometimes I was accused. In fact, one time Jim Keane had me address a Rotary Club, and he introduced me as controversial. And I said to the audience, I said, well, if telling the truth is controversial, then I suppose I am. So that's the premise I used. You know, Rapid City was quite a bit different when I was a boy. I came up here from the reservation when my dad got a job at, used to be called Rapid City Air Force Base. And we came up during World War II. And Rapid City was quite a different place back then. As far as finding a place to live was almost impossible for Native Americans. And most of us settled up around North Rapid or along Rapid Creek. And so we moved up to North Rapid. And a lot of my friends from the reservations came up in the summertime. And One of my friends and I got together. His name was Chuck Trimble, who incidentally became a journalist. And we were walking downtown Rapid City, and we saw these beautiful revolving doors at the Alex Johnson Hotel. And we thought, well, let's try these doors out. So we went through the doors and went around, and a doorman came and grabbed us both and literally kicked us, and he said, get out of here, you dirty little Indians. And so that's kind of the way Rapid was back then. And I guess the ironic thing of that is those two dirty little Indians are both now in the South Dakota Hall of Fame.
Could talk about some of the challenges to launching an independent newspaper whose primary readership was on the reservation. Why was it important to be independent of tribal government or of any government, and how did you accomplish that?
Well, you know, in the first place, I wasn't very bright when I did it, because I opened it in 1981, my first newspaper, the Lakota Times. And the reason I say I wasn't very bright is because back then, interest rates were almost 20%. Chandon County, where Pine Ridge was located, was declared the poorest county in the United States. So here I am with interest sky high on the poorest county in America trying to start a business. And I think the reason it took off and succeeded is because we didn't have a newspaper that addressed all our own issues. We didn't have anything to talk about education, about the justice system, about the schools, about our religion. So our paper came in and it filled that gap. We provided news every single week about all of the issues that were important to the people who really weren't being included in the state media. Most of the coverage that took place on reservation from the outside media was negative. Crimes and what have you. Some people even got their news by going down to the courthouse. So we bridged that gap, and we started doing news that showed we had a lot of good achievers. We had teachers, we had doctors, we had lawyers, we had a lot of people that had come from the reservation and really changed their own lives and the lives of their own people.
When did you know that the newspaper, the model that you had created, the business model and the product, the newspaper itself, when did you know that it was, that had taken hold, that it was going to be successful?
You know something, the first issue that was published, we printed 4,000 copies, and I loaded it in my car. I printed it in Chatter, Nebraska, and I drove to every store on the Pine Ridge Reservation and all the border towns, and I delivered it. And on the way back into Pine Ridge Village, there's a bus stop just across the street from the Sioux Nation Shopping Center. And as I was driving by, this is the first day the paper ever came out. There were two elderly Lakota men sitting on those benches, and they both had a copy of the Dakota Times, and they were reading it. And I just about jumped out of my car to thank them, because that was, I just knew then that the paper was going to succeed.
Wow. Are there stories that stand out to you, or columns when you work for the Rapid City Journal that stand out to you, work that you did over the years that really resonates now, and that you still remember either the process of going through it or the response to it?
Well, you know, I think a lot of people don't really understand the old saying that there's power of the pen. And it, and not only were we a newspaper, we are also an advocate for Indian rights. And in 1990, it was the 100th anniversary of the massacre at Wounded Knee was coming up. And the Virgil Kilstraight and some of the people from Pine Ridge were going to follow the exact path that Chief Bigfoot took when he came from Cheyenne River to Pine Ridge seeking the protection of Red Cloud after Sitting Bull had been assassinated up in Standing Rock. So with his followers, they came to Wounded Knee Creek and ran into the 7th Cavalry. As you know, probably nearly 300 men, women, and children were shot down in cold blood. So the anniversary was coming up for the 100th anniversary of it. And I did an editorial, and I challenged Governor George Mickelson, a Republican governor, to let's do something about this. Let's do something to reconcile our differences. So he proclaimed 1990 the year of reconciliation. And at the same time, I had a visit with him when we were planning some of the activities we were going to do that year. And I asked him, why don't we also push to change Columbus Day to Native American Day? He introduced legislation, a bill to do that. And with his staff and my staff, we pushed really hard the state legislators to do it. And so that year also, Columbus Day was not celebrated, but Native American Day for the first time was celebrated in 1990. So those are some of the things a small weekly newspaper can do, I think, if you have someone in a power position that is empathetic and understanding. That's what Governor George Mickelson was.
Do you remember how you celebrated that first day in 1990? What did you do that day?
I think I went out and had a big dinner.
What did South Dakota newspapers and South Dakota media in general really need at that time that you really, you know, you've talked a little bit about what it provided to the people who, you know, it's a community newspaper, and so it provides something to the community. Did it also provide something to the people beyond that community?
Well, you know, I think a lot of people erroneously believe that newspapers are dying. And I don't see that at all. Our newspaper is strong. And I think one of the reasons is because we don't have access to the internet in a lot of ways, or people can't afford to buy computers. So when you get out in the middle of Pine Ridge, Rosebud, or Cheyenne River, some of the large reservations, their source of news is the newspaper. They read Native Sun News Today. It brings them their local news as well as national news that can help them make sound decisions. So when we first started more than 30 years ago in South Dakota, I think we brought a new voice to the media. We started, I think, showing a lot of the papers that had hardly touched Native American news that there's a lot of important stories out there, and there's a lot of good stories. And we joined the South Dakota Newspaper Association more than 30 years ago and became competitors with some of our fellow newspaper people. And went on to win a lot of awards, I think, simply because we did have a newspaper that was independent and unique.
Did you receive pressure from tribal government to be less independent? It seems like every journalist has a story about local leaders sort of leaning into you and asking you to tell a different story.
I think tribal governments owned almost all the newspapers in Indian country back in those days. And of course, they had the say of what went into the paper and what didn't. I chose to be independent because I wanted to have that voice that could challenge the authority or praise or condemn whatever it was going to take to get the news out. One of the things that was happening just a few years before we started the newspaper was the occupation of Wounded Knee and all of the violence that was taking place on the reservations. We addressed that. We started doing hard-hitting editorials that challenged both sides to stop the violence. And we did editorials naming names, and we paid a heavy price. Our windows were shot out of the newspaper three times. In December, just before Christmas in 1982, we were firebombed. And I came out of my office one night after putting the paper to bed and got my pickup. My windshield was blasted out in my face. So these were just... I think, I always said it's hard enough running a darn business without being killed in the process.
Did you ever sort of lose your resolve there?
I don't think I ever did. Yeah. I think these attacks did just make me more angry.
Right.
I thought, they can't do this to us. We are here. We're going to bring out the truth, and that's all there is to it. And if I have to give my life doing it, that's exactly what I was going to do.
If you're just tuning in, my guest is Tim Gallego. On September 8th, he receives the 2017 Native American Journalist Association's Medill Milestone Achievement Award. I'm wondering, Mr. Gallego, if journalism has an artistic endeavor or an artistic side. How do you balance the facts and sort of the narrative that needs to be told, that needs to be developed to tell a story well? What's your relationship with sort of the artistic side of journalism and storytelling?
Well, I think journalism and good writing is art. A good writer has to be creative. A good writer has to go behind the scenes and see the things that other people don't see. And I think a well-written story can cause people to laugh, cause people to think, cause people to cry, and can address some of the really complicated and controversial issues in a way that people will understand all sides of an issue. At least that's our dream. That's our hopes.
What is the work that's left to be done? How far have you come? How far have we come? And what needs to be done next?
I think we've come a long way. I'm really proud of the South Dakota Newspaper Association and some of the changes that they've initiated over all of these years. And Dave Bordewick has done his best to bring a lot of good issues up to all of the newspapers in this state. If a newspaper is going to be successful, it has to tell the people in the community the story of what's happened to them, to themselves. And that's why I think community newspapers in South Dakota are still hanging on. They're still successful, even though maybe some of the larger newspapers like Post Intelligencer are in Seattle, Washington, and the Tucson Citizen, some of those papers folded. They were daily papers. Mm. And I don't know that they didn't have a grip on their community and understand their own community. So I think that's the most important thing right now facing all of us. And then we have such competition. We have people that are doing blogs. We have the internet. We have Facebook. And everybody can create their own little newspaper on their Facebook pages anytime. So the only problem with that is, I come back to the word truth, they're not obligated to tell the truth. They're not obligated to be honest with their readers. Whereas a newspaper, you are obligated because what you're putting down is in print.
Do people understand that anymore, or have people just lost their faith in journalism and in newspapers? Do you think people get the distinction that as a newspaper you're obligated to be objective and to find truth?
Well, you know, we've been accused of being fake news, as you know, and I think as long as we stick to our guns and write the truth, that we're going to be all right. Our president calls the New York Times the fading, dying newspaper, and yet it has grown substantially over the past few years, and it has gone a lot to the internet also with its digital version. And finally, the digital advertising is catching up with the print advertising. So you can have a dream, you can have ideals, but it's like owning a horse. You have to feed it every now and then, and that's where you have to have income.
You talked about understanding your own community. What do you understand about South Dakota, about the readership of your newspapers over the years that maybe you didn't understand when you first started out?
Well, you know, I was born and raised on the Pioneer Reservation and didn't know much about any of the communities outside of the reservation except for the border towns like Rushville, and Gordon, Chatham. And those were the places that we went to shop, since we didn't really have any shopping places at Pine Ridge back in those days. So, but since I've been in this business, I think I've met a lot of editors and publishers from across the state. I've made friends with a lot of them. I've met a lot of good people in this business, like Tom Brokaw and Ellen Newharth, people that were contributors to helping the Native American Journalists Association get off the ground. It was the very first grant we got to start the Native American Journalism Association was from Ellen Newharth and the Freedom Forum. So, and Al came as one of our speakers at our very first convention. So it really started to unite and bring us together as a people, I think. And Newharth was a very strong believer that Native Americans had to have access to the media like everybody else.
How has the work changed you?
I think it's probably made me a more understanding and probably, maybe some people won't believe it, but more of a gentle person. Mm. I've seen so much misery in the world and in our communities, and it's issues I've had to cover that, it makes you think, it makes you want to improve the world, makes you want to improve the lives of your own people. And I think a newspaper can, and the media in general, can have a strong input into helping change the situation in the world today.
Hmm. What's next for you personally?
Well, I would like to sit down and and to write a book about all of the things that happened in my life, starting with the newspaper business or going back to my days at a boarding school. I find that a lot of people really don't believe, like you and I discussed a long time ago, Lori, that these boarding schools existed and they were a bad time in the history of America for Native Americans. So those are the things I think I want to write about. And a lot of the young Native Americans today have no idea what their parents or grandparents went through in order to bring their lives to what they are now a lot better than their predecessors.
I would read that book, definitely. Are you working on it now? Do you write daily?
Yes, ma'am, sure am. Yeah. Taking notes every day.
Tim Gallego, thank you so much for this time that you've shared with us today. Congratulations on your award, and I hope that you come back again and talk with us frequently.
It's always been my pleasure, Lori.